The book is The Pirates by George MacDonald Fraser. Book the second, chapter the seventh. Lovely boating weather, bilge on the tropic breeze. Swing, swing together with your fetters between your knees. Let's hear it for Akbar, his galliot never leaks. We'll all swing together and swear by the best of sheiks. The dismal wailing of the lash-scarred slaves, toiling at the oars of Akbar, the damned's infernal galley, drifted down the night breeze, broken only by the crack of the overseer's whips and the occasional gasping cry of, "Well rowed, Balliol!" and "Roll on the outboard motor!" from the parched throats of the rowers. It carried but faintly to the shell-like ears of Lady Vanity, as she sat in the great stern cabin, proud but palpitating, submitting to the ministrations of the eunuch hairdresser, who was preparing her, well, she knew it, for the loathsome embraces of Akbar himself. He was upstairs somewhere, splashing on the brute, oiling his beard and humming, "I can't give you anything but love, baby," in the lingua franca of the Barbary coast, what time he gnashed his magnificent teeth in anticipation of the treat in store, from which you will be relieved to gather that nothing untoward has happened yet. But a glance at our heroine will inform you that it won't be long now. Akbar's handmaidens haven't dressed her in those see-through harem trousers and gauzy bra for a walk in the park. So little wonder that Vanity shuddered as the eunuch fussed with comb and rollers. "Oh, I don't know what butcher last had his hands on this lot, love," he piped despairingly, "but he must have cut it with a knife and fork. It would make you sick. I daren't think what the boss'll say, and him that particular when he ravishes Christian maidens. He'll go mad. Hang on, while I get me setting lotion." With a moan of fear, Vanity started up, her ivory fingers, now alluringly aglitter with barbaric jewels, flying to her parted ruby lips as she caught sight of herself in the full-length mirror. She stared, at once terrified and fascinated by the perfection of her own milk-white beauty, so ill-concealed by the flimsy Oriental finery. What man could resist her? She reflected hopelessly, least of all that great swarthy, magnificently muscled, flashing-eyed predator with his amazing hairy chest and superb shoulders and sexy forked beard. For a moment her blue eyes misted as she considered her shapeliness, turning this way and that as she pushed back her golden tresses, pouting and undulating in an absent-minded way, as she murmured, "Fry's Turkish delight," ere the hideous reality of her plight returned, and she sank to her silken couch like filleted bream. Oh, why had not nature made her thin and knock-kneed and spotty? If only she had bloated herself with chocks and milkshakes like the other girls. But then Captain Avery, her wonderful godlike lover, would scarcely have remarked her, let alone vowed his undying passion. "Ah, wretched me," she repined through pearl-like tears, "that peerless beauty, which captured my true love's boyish senses, undoes me quite, for now it must inflame the feral passion of that randy Bedouin in the spiked hat. Oh, Ben, dear heart, haste to me, and for pity's sake get the lead out of your pants, or 'twill be too late." Did that virgin prayer float down the sea wind to her lover? Probably not, and he wouldn't have heard it anyway, not half a mile off, and with blood whinging at him in the dark. But he was there just the same, his keen eyes like silicon chips as they scanned the murk ahead. News picked up from a passing Beetlejuice tanker, and the telltale jetsam of used date packets thrown overboard by the corsairs had put him on Akbar's track. All day had he piloted his frail craft in the wake of that sinister hull barely seen on the horizon, and now that night had fallen and the galley's pace had slowed, with the corsairs doling out their meager measures of horlicks to the wretched slaves, Long Ben Avery was racing in, with helm aweather and molars gritted, determined to snatch his beloved from the clutches of shameful captivity, or die i' the attempt. "And you know which it'll be, don't you?" protested Blood for the umpteenth time. "Hast lost thy marbles quite? We don't stand a prayer. Divil admire me, man. There must be 600 angry wogs on that galley if there's one. And we but poor two. Look, let's get sensible and do it diplomatic-like. Notes to governments and UN resolutions and things."
"Cheese it, Colonel," was Avery's crisp rejoinder. "Thy clack untimely stirs my just contempt. Look rather to the powder-keg and fuse, for therein lies our chief hope to surprise these infidels and effect my dear one's enlargement."
"And a bum idea, if ever I heard one," snapped Blood, rummaging in the gloom for the keg which Avery indicated.
"All right, you say you've done it before, but not, let me point out, with an Irish engineer striking the matches. Which end of the fuse do I light?"
"Hist! What see ye yonder, i' the loom of night?" cried Avery, and flung out a pointing finger in a gesture supremely dramatic, barking his knuckles painfully.
"That's our mast," said Blood caustically.
"Beyond, I mean. See there," hissed Avery, sucking his fingers, and sure enough, through the darkling gloom shone the light from a great stern window, where the galley glided slowly ahead of them. Zoom quickly in, and through the window, and we find Lady Vanity backed against the panelling, pale but peerless, trying to cover herself up with cushions, what time the swarthy Akbar, feasting hot eyes upon her, locked the door and advanced, licking his chops, his Christian Dior gold medal bobbing passionately on his gleaming naked chest. "Shalt bring a fair price from some lucky man in Basra," he growled, leering. "But first thou art Akbar's, aye."
"Another step, and I call the conductor," cried Lady Vanity proudly. "Get lost, thou foulness! I want the British ambassador."
"Fix not thy hopes on him," snarled Akbar. "He doesn't go for blondes."
And with cat-like speed he pounced, sweeping her into his embrace, his hot breath causing her golden locks to stream backwards from her ivory brow.
"Ay, flutter thy soft pinions as thou wilt, little dove," he crooned hatefully. "'Twill make for better sport."
And chuckling cruelly, he rained burning kisses on lips, nose, chin, throat. It's a matter of split seconds now, but the marines have arrived, all unsuspected, making fast their boat neath the galley stern, jamming the powder keg under the rudder. Blood swearing and clicking his lighter at the fuse, Avery swinging up the chains like a startled marmoset, rapier clenched twixt flawless teeth, the light of battle in his eye and the taste of Brasso in his mouth. An instant he paused under the sill while Blood panted up behind him.
"Wait, I've got a better idea," hissed the colonel. "Why don't we buy her? You know, make him an offer."
A scream of mortal anguish rent the night like a steam whistle, the cry of a lost soul in the very abyss of agony and despair. Vanity had given Akbar the knee in a vital spot, and the proud scourge of the seas was rolling on the carpet, clutching himself and gasping for the trainer. Then, with a cry of, "Remember the Alamo!" Avery had surged through the window, rapier awhirl, found he was in the wrong cabin, apologized, blushing, and darted through a communicating door to the main saloon where the action was, all of which had given Akbar nice time to hobble painfully to his feet, select a convenient scimitar, wince with a ruptured oath as he straightened up,
shoot a reproachful glance at Vanity, bawl for the guards, and cross blades with Avery, as the latter bounded in, roaring, "It's cutlasses now, men!" Blood, following more cautiously, paused to blink appreciatively at the wide-eyed Vanity, slipped a protective arm round her waist, and got his face slapped for familiarity. He would have protested, but at that moment the powder keg exploded under the rudder, blowing half the bottom off the galley and causing some confusion. Akbar and Avery were fencing away like crazy, jumping on the furniture, exchanging defiant remarks like, "Your sands are run, Muslim beast," and "You've come to Nottingham Castle once too often." Wrong period, but you get the idea. To and fro they stamped and slashed, Akbar gnashing desperately for his constitution, undermined by dancing girls and Rahut Lakum, to say nothing of the crunching low tackle from Vanity, was no match for the finely tuned agility and perfect timing of his clean living opponent. Furthermore, Akbar's curved scimitar, while ideal for thrusting round corners in a crafty oriental way, was ill-suited against the straight and trusty British blade, from Toledo, actually. While his minions pounded on the locked door, shouting, "Was there something, O Falcon of Islam?" and "Last call for second sitting," Akbar fell back, sweat pouring down his face and chest and playing havoc with his carefully applied deodorant. Avery, his blade the usual, ubiquitous, whirling menace, pressed his advantage, his eyes beautifully poised on either side of features which were a superbly sculpted mask of virtuous determination, and flung an order over his shoulder, not bothering to see where it landed. "Look to the lady, ho!" Blood, who was trying to convince an indignant Vanity that there was no impropriety in giving her a fireman's lift, paused to view the lightning play of his companion's blade. "That's it, boy," cried he approvingly. "Take no nonsense from him, Ben. You lay on. Now, mistress, if you'll kindly—"
"Take your clod-hopping paws off me," snapped Vanity, who had no intention of being rescued by a supporting player. "Help him, can't you? See, he is sore beset."
For Akbar, heartened by the fact that his corsairs were now beating down the door, had made a last furious effort, his gold lamé jeans stretched to the limit, his scimitar hissing in a glittering arc. He hurled himself on Avery. A shriek from Vanity, a slither and clash of blades whirling like egg whisks, and our healthy Anglo-Saxon caught the scimitar on his fort, extended himself in a beautifully academic lunge, and sent his point through the corsair's sweaty, reeking, hairy chest. Akbar's face contorted appropriately. The scimitar fell from his nerveless hand. His forked beard quivered in its death agony, and with a strangled cry of, "God, that hurt!" the great sea-wolf of Barbary sank lifeless to the floor and began to mess up the parquet. Vanity cried, "Eek!" Blood said smugly, "See, what did I tell you?" And Avery, wiping his ensanguined blade with a sternly compassionate tissue, pronounced the swordsman's traditional valediction on his fallen adversary. "Well, Brian, what can I say, except that without good losers we wouldn't have worthy winners, would we? I didn't know our friend on the floor all that well, but he certainly contributed to the extremely sporting contest we've had here tonight. Heathen muckrake, though some might call him, but this isn't the time for recriminations, is it? He did his best, and I had what luck was going, I suppose, although I honestly felt I was fitter and better trained than he was, which I owe to my old school and all the people who had confidence in me. I suppose that's about all, really, except to say I'm just sorry he can't have a rematch." His manly oration was interrupted by half the cabin floor falling in, with a raging inferno of smoke and flame surging up from the doomed vessel. Pausing only to abstract Akbar's piece of the Madagascar crown from the in-tray on the ormolu-encrusted desk, Avery sprang to the window where Blood was supporting the swooning Vanity. "Why do you tarry, man?" cried Avery. "Into the boat for our lives!"
"What boat?" snarled Blood savagely. "You and your powder kegs! We'll disable the pagan villains, says you. Pity it didn't occur to you that in blowing their stern off, we might just blister the paint on our own little skylark. 'Tis sunk and burning shards wi' a warning, and we trapped like mice on fiery hulk, as shall presently founder."
"Dash it," said Avery, his noble brow momentarily furrowed, the ruffles on his shirt quivering with anxious excitement. His keen glance raked the water, where, amidst the fiery wreckage, the Corsair crew were taking to the lifeboats, clutching their suitcases and six-packs of sherbet, calling on Allah, and gesticulating wildly, tearing their hair, falling in the water, and doing all those things which well-trained extras do on abandoning ship. For Avery, it was money for old rope to wait until one boat drifted beneath the stern, drop into it with athletic grace, disperse the occupants overboard with a few straight lefts and karate chops, volley a crisp order to Blood, catch the falling vanity with one hand while holding the tiller with the other, set a course, unfurl the lateen sail, tramp on the fingers of various fellaheen clutching at the gunwales, and gaze back fearlessly at the burning hulk behind them, while Blood, who had fallen in the water and dragged himself aboard, sodden and spluttering, laid hold of the oars and pulled for dear life. Thus, with vanity disposed gracefully in the stern sheets, and our hero soothing her marble brow with a sock dipped in sea-water, his calm voice calling, in, out, to the laboring Blood, the little boat glided smoothly beyond the glow of the doomed vessel and into the shielding tropic night, while the despairing cries of the shipwrecked corsairs faded behind them.
Bismillah! I knew that curry was off! It's a Zionist plot! Mark my words! Peace, brothers! What is written! It is kismet! Kismet, my foot! I don't care if it's Chu Chin Chow! I'm shipping with P&O the next time!
Later, neath waning tropic moon, with balmy zephyrs stirring vanity's golden tresses and whistling through her gauzy trousers, as she lay in the embrace of Avery's muscular right arm, while his muscular left one managed the tiller, and he furled the sail with his foot, our lovers discoursed fondly on this wise. Avery. So, one villain down, five to go, and go they shall.
Vanity. Not tonight, thanks. I'm pooped. Incidentally, what kept you? Writhing in the hated embrace of swarthy ravisher, I thought you'd never show up.
Avery. Nay, sweeting, we came with all dispatch. But now all's well. See, I've copped back Akbar's chunk of the crown, which is what really matters, since 'tis first step to clear my good name, fulfill my mission, and regain the esteem of my superiors. Vanity, with slight edge.
Darling, I seem to remember talking to you about priorities before. I mean, aren't you just a teeny bit pleased that I've been saved from a rather indelicate fate? He wasn't exactly a male model, you know.
Avery. Nay, fond heart, how could I be other? Without thee, all is naught. I just meant that until I've mopped up these rotters, recovered the whole crown, and squared myself with your old man, well, how should I aspire to thy beauteous hand if mine honour and credit were still leaking at the seams?
Vanity. That's more like it. Convince me by forgetting my hand for the moment, and concentrating on these, my soft, parted lips.
Avery. Oh, bliss! Embracing her with enthusiasm.
Blood. Anyone care to take a spell at the oars?
Avery, ecstatically.
Vanity, slightly muffled. Oh, rapture!
Blood.
The hell with it! What's the use?
Anon, when the adoring duo had kissed their sweet fill, and Vanity was restoring her make-up, what time Blood opened a tin of corned beef and sulkily set out plates, Avery outlined his plan of campaign. As I judge from the stars, we are precisely 7¾ leagues east-northeast of Libertatia, on the coast of Madagascar.
Well, I hope there's a decent hairdresser, but I'll bet their dress shops are the pits, pouted Vanity, twitching at her scanty finery. And I can't go home like this. Look at me.
Any time, leered Blood, buttering biscuits. Another fresh crack like that, snapped Avery, and you can start swimming. Nay, fondest love, he continued to Vanity, we touch not at Libertatia, which is notorious nest of vile pirates and related sea scum. For that matter, he added, I don't suppose they've got a hairdresser worth a hoot, and for raiment, 'twould be strictly off the peg at the ship's chandler's. It behooves us to slip by and set course for the Cape, there to set thee ashore to await arrival of thy father and those with him who were cast adrift. 'Tis there they'll make their landfall. I shan't come ashore myself, under cloud of shame and suspicion as I am, but I shall rejoin thee straight as soon as I have destroyed the coast brethren and collared the crown. Right? Good. Have some bully and biscuits.
But haughty Vanity tossed her golden head. And I'm to hang about in some dismal 2-star flea pit, probably without air conditioning and heated swimming pool? Not likely. Besides, who shall say where Daddy has got to by now, cast clueless on the cruel deep? Let's face it, he may be an admiral, but he couldn't navigate across the Bath. The old boy's past it. It may be ages before he blows in.
But, angel mine, protested Avery, I can't take you with me, can I? Not at a dire peril of bloody battle and fell mayhem, when you could be snug as a bug at the Cape. The inn, probably, has a suite with a balcony, and I won't be gone long.
Gently he folded her in his arms, her head nestled on his romantically open shirt-front, and gave a confident ringing laugh, which reassured and deafened her simultaneously.
Why, what's to do when all's said? A mere 5 stark villains and their few 100 followers to hunt down o'er the trackless waste of ocean, sort them out, collect the loot. 2 weeks' work, perhaps? Say 3, or a month at most, and I shall be hasting back triumphant to thy side. And a sweet little side it is, he said. He added fondly, giving her bare midriff a chaste and reverent stroke, which brought a blush to her maiden cheek and sent goose pimples rocketing around her shapely frame. What could she do but sigh and submit to his masterful persuasion and allow him to feed her morsels of corned beef on biscuit? Blood watched them jealously over his dinner. All this Errol and Olivia canoodling gave him the pip, and he could guess who was going to get stuck with the washing up to. Moodily he listened while Avery outlined his program.
I shall deal first with that hell-spite Sheba, quoth the captain, and his brows were knit like stern cardigans. Since, woman though she be, yet I judge her most dangerous, cruel, and fertile of evil invention among them all.
She's the cutest, too, remarked Blood, taking an artless swig of oxo. Black but comely, yowser!
Avery wrinkled his perfect nostrils. You spoke, sir?
Oh, I was just after thinking aloud, said Blood maliciously, that in startin' with the ebony nemesis, you're on a good thing, since with her you might prevail with gentle rather than warlike arts. Why, such is her love and regard for you, that she may even prove willing ally instead of enemy.
Babble, said Avery curtly, likewise tripe. As I was saying, my adored one, having dealt with the pirate Virago, I shall next put the mockers on Black Bilbo.
Hold it, said Vanity, and Blood noted, with satisfaction, the faint frown clouding her lovely visage. What was that crack about her loving regard for you?
Pish! I mean cha! Sorry about that, said Avery. He waved a dismissive hand. Nay, 'tis but that the misguided trull conceived a spark of gratitude for that I stopped them lambasting her with cat-o'-nine-tails. You remember Lambkin?
I certainly do, said Vanity coldly. I also remember that having boned my cosmetics and made free of my wardrobe, she couldn't get me off the ship fast enough. So ho!
Frost formed on her velvety lids as she regarded the captain with eyes like blue pickles.
Strange, too, that when she tipped Daddy and the other loyal hearts over the side, she kept you on the shelf. I wonder why.
Avery shrugged modestly. Why, for that were my manly address, dauntless bearing, double first, and proved fighting quality. She and her fellows would have had me join their company. After all, you don't pick up bargains like me every day. But I am no renegade, he concluded proudly. I cast the base offer back in their teeth.
It's a fact, said Blood unctuously. Indeed, ma'am, he was proof against all her wanton arts and wiles. Aye, though she cast herself panting on him like one distraught with passion, and babbled of love nests and leopard-skin tracksuits, yet he spurned her.
Sort of. Vanity was too much the high-bred English lady to emit more than a woof, in which dismay and jealous fury were nicely blended, but her feminine instinct reached for the rolling-pin. Avery, frowning at Blood, didn't notice. "Give it a rest," quo' he irritably. "I regarded her not, a poor demented creature."
"A poor demented 38, 24, 36," cried Vanity hotly, and the tumult of her bosom threatened to capsize the boat. "So, the ebony wanton has been pitching her curves at you, has she? That does it. If you think you're going to dump me at the Cape while you go prancing after that sable sex-spot, you can think again. I'm coming with you, Junior, and you can stick that in your binnacle and steer it."
"But, Lovelight, what is this?" Avery was astonished. "I pursue her but to mete out merited chastisement."
"And don't think she wouldn't love that," scoffed Vanity.
"But she is nothing to me," protested the captain. "I disdain her quite. Her sleek voluptuousness, her steamy sensuality, her hot advances, the way she swings dem hips." He paused, his pure and serene features wearing a dreamy, puzzled look, and came back to earth with a start. "Where was I? Oh, yes. These fleshly allurements, howsoe'er they may beguile the lewder sort, are so much cold custard to me, honest. Nay, dear ducks," he continued in fond reproach, "hast no faith, no loving trust, in this thy devoted Ben?"
"Loving trust? Fooey, you big idiot!" cried Vanity. "What avails it against sultry bimbos and leopard skin? Or out of it, which she would be with one quick wriggle. That is competition in big neon lights, and whiles I doubt not thy intended constancy, yet I do know thee for a man, and you're all alike, and it's worse in your case because you're so noble and innocent it hurts. She could twist you round her little black pinky, and you wouldn't even know it was happening."
So now ensued a pretty lover's tiff, Avery all virtuous bewilderment, and Vanity, being female, torn between a desire to fling her arms round him and an urge to belt him with some solid object, while Blood watched sardonically the mischief he had wrought, and hogged the tinned pears and chocolate ripple which completed their simple repast. In her vexation, Vanity stamped her dainty foot, forgetting that harem costume doesn't include shoes, and got a splinter in her toe, whereon followed rich hockey-field oaths with cries of concern from her lover, followed by Savlon and plaster and kissing it better, which soothed her slightly, but not enough to alter her concrete resolve to stick like glue to her betrothed through whatever perils and temptations, chiefly the latter, might lie ahead. And because Avery was so besotted with her that he could deny her nothing,
and suspected he would just get a thick ear if he tried, he at length agreed to take her along at least part of the way, and proposed a compromise which, while it was later to become commonplace among romantic heroes with surplus heroines on their hands in pirate waters, was revolutionary in his day. He would bestow her on an uninhabited island paradise, safely away from the action, yet close enough that he might nip back between engagements and see her at weekends. "I know the very spot," he assured her. "The pleasant Isle of Aves. No doubt you learned the poem at school. A very Eden, where once I wooded and watered whilst serving against the cursed dons. There, in grotto secure, shall I build thee a two-story bower, all set about with fragrant blossoms and stored with jungle delicacies, the booming surf and gentle breezes to lull thy slumbers, mosquito cream by the bucket, and only 2 minutes from the beach. What says my angel? And I can get on toughing up the Coast Brotherhood without interference," he thought privately. It sounded so like a travel brochure that while Vanity pouted instinctively, she decided that this was just the old boot. 4 weeks on a desert island with her dream man would have him eating out of her hand, and even if he had to commute to his pirate hunting between times, he'd hardly be away long enough to get involved with designing pirate queens. And later she would be able to flog her castaway experiences to Master Defoe, which would be useful pin money and splendid publicity if he could work it into The Spectator, assuming Addison had got it underway by then. Perhaps Lily could be persuaded to paint her in a grass skirt. "All right," she agreed. "We'll give it a whirl. But only for 4 weeks, mind, because I don't suppose I'll be able to get a woman in to clean, and Daddy's bound to bump into land somewhere eventually, and the old buffer will go hairless if I'm nowhere to be found." So the two lovers planned and murmured lovingly in the stern sheets, and presently Vanity drowsed off. Avery covered her with a boat cloak, and having lashed the tiller, furled the gunwales, and done all things needful, do you see, to set the 17th-century equivalent of the automatic pilot, disposed himself reverently at his loved one's feet, and flaked out, which was careless, as we shall see. For in the bows Colonel Blood lay wakeful, by reason of his dark thoughts and his vest riding up uncomfortably in the cramped conditions. He had long since regretted his sentimental decision to throw in his lot with our dauntless hero. The fight on Akbar's galley had scared him witless, and had been looking forward to going ashore at the Cape and trying his caddish luck with Vanity while Avery was away getting cut up God knew where. Now, from what he had overheard, that was out, and desert islands with regular excursions against the likes of Sheba and Firebeard were no adequate substitute. Also, he was about brassed off with being left to make the meals and wring out dishcloths, while our fond lovers snogged and giggled and generally treated him like Caliban. Not good enough, brooded the colonel. Time something was done about it. Thus it haps that as the little craft runs down the night sea to appropriate soft violin music, with the loom of the Madagascar coast faintly abeam, off to one side, that is, there falls a sudden, sinister chord of woodwinds to inform us that villainy is tucking in its shirt and is about to prowl around working fell design. Stealthy movement in the boat, a cat-like footfall, tense, heavy breathing, the crash of a large body falling over a bucket, a muffled Irish yowl, rustle of barked shin being rubbed, and then again silence, broken only by a placid sigh from the sleeping Vanity, dreaming about lolling on golden sands while Ben does high dives off a convenient rock, and a soft murmur from Avery, corned beef, followed by subdued swearing and labored scratching of pen on paper in the dark, while gloom of night gave way to pearly radiance of dawn. But what is this? There are now only two in the boat, and pinned to the thwart, where Avery will see it as soon as he wakes, a hastily scrawled note as under. "Hello, sailor. You mind I warned you I might play false? Well, this is it, old joy. And if I said it grieved me, I'd be a liar, which I am. But that's not to the matter. The fact is, I am up to here, so I am, with a snooty blonde cupcake and a bomb-happy maniac who is so dangerously gung-ho it makes me faint to think on it. And I mean you, dear Ben, in case you're wondering. So I'm swimming for it, and doubt not I shall win to Libertatia, where fun and frolic rule among rascals of my own kidney. Which reminds me, there is some corned beef left under a cloth. So fare ye well, and that ye keep your head down, and have a care that big spade lady is the advice of one who knows, and signs himself as thou usest him, your obedient servant and while on messmate, Thomas Blood, Colonel Cashiered. Postscriptum, to defray expenses, I have taken the crownly Jewjaw ye won back from that fearsome wog. Good luck with the other five." You might have known Blood wouldn't play fair for long, but pinching the piece of crown is a bit thick, even for him, since it puts Avery back to square one as he and Vanity head for the Isle of Aves, which may not be as pleasant as he painted it. It doesn't figure in the color supplements, does it? Significant, eh? And while Akbar the Damned has been written off, there remain the frightful five to be dealt with, as they gloat over their spoils and plan fresh mischief in the vile hells of Libertatia. Little does Blood know what he's heading into, as he swims his knavish, ungainly breaststroke towards the Madagascar show with his ill-gotten swag.